T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said,
Sports Radio, 99.9 The Game. Back on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you on a Thursday night. Time for the Brown Liquor Music Hour. Chuckery always gets the first request. Little Smokey Robinson, The Miracles. Been going with the Motown theme this week. I'm guessing, Jarvis, we had no Brown Liquor music last night. Would that be a fair assessment? Yeah. That's all right. I figured. But everybody respects the show, right? Right. That's what I always get told. Anytime I used to fill in, it was, oh, yeah, we got to respect the show. Yeah, got to. You wouldn't want somebody coming on your show and doing that, right? Oh, don't they do it all the time, Terry? Anyway, sorry. Did I call everybody out by name on all that? So, yeah. 404-741-0929. Do I sound bitter at all? Does I sound bitter at all? 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to interact with us. Download the radio.com app to catch us on the go. Also, to follow us on social media at 929thegame. I'm at JMCH316. He is at JarvisD90. Let's get to a college football roundup.
It's time for the College Football Roundup. A complete look at all the collegiate football action. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, so let's start with Arkansas head coach Sam Pittman, who actually had to pony up, not himself personally, but school had to pony up some additional money. They were in danger of losing some of their coaching staff that they had started putting together. Pittman said that in early March, two of his coaches, Brad Davis, who is his offensive line coach, and you probably remember this name, former Missouri head coach Barry Odom, who is the DC in Arkansas, he confirmed that those two assistants had drawn interest from other programs, and as a way to try to keep them, they each got $100,000 raises on top of the guaranteed compensation for which their original contracts called. So now that means Odom makes $1.3 million on his deal for 2020. That makes him the highest paid assistant on the staff, and Davis's pay will go up to $650,000 with the raise. And listen, that's the reality of where things are at in college football. When you've got coaching changes or hot assistants or anything like that, and then, of course, we know that when guys get in the SEC, people are always looking for a way to try to keep them, right? I mean, schools are always trying to pillage guys within the SEC. The SEC loves guys that have been there and its own types of coaches, so it's no surprise that other schools, you know, within, and I think one of them was Texas A&M that was calling for one of the assistants out there as well. So, listen, no better way to get a raise in college football than for somebody to put a rumor out there that you you may be wanting to go somewhere else or be looking for a different outlet. Texas, University of Texas, by God, Texas, as Wes Durham would say. According to 247 Sports, Denzel Okafor has entered his name in the NCAA transfer portal. Now, why is that significant at all? Not so much about the player and things like that, but that's now five guys that have entered the transfer portal from Texas. Donovan DuVernay, DeAndre Christmas-Giles, Gerald Wilbon, Juwan Mitchell, and now add the name Denzel Okafor. Five kids this year already have put their name into the transfer portal coming off the University of Texas. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a bad sign from Tom Herman, but I can't imagine. Look, are you going to have a kid here and there that goes? Yeah, of course. We know that. But doesn't it seem like that's a high number, that in one off season you've had five kids already that have decided to go in the transfer portal from your team? I know it's the new way of the world. I know kids want to play right away. I get all that. But you wouldn't think that many kids from a program like Texas would be wanting to move out or move on or whatever you want to call it at that point. But maybe that's more normal. That just seems like it's high for a top-flight program like Texas has. So ESPN did a story with some of their college football writers that was taking a look at kids coming in for this 2020 recruiting class that's signed, sealed, and delivered. And they asked several head coaches, coordinators, position coaches, and personnel directors from every Power 5 conference, as well as a handful from the Group of Five ranks, okay? And what they asked them was they wanted to look at players. Basically, it's a recruiting survey that they were looking at who are going to be some of the most impactful recruits coming in immediately. Okay, so basically, you got votes of guys. Who's going to be the most impactful? So, for instance, here's some of the top guys. Tight end Eric Gilbert, who actually went to Marietta High School. He's not playing for Georgia, but he's going to be playing for LSU. And he got the most with eight votes. LSU last year had the highest voted prospect last year with Derek Stingley. How'd that work out? What was he about? Maybe the number two or three cornerback in all of college football by the end of season. But they say that his combination of size, speed, athleticism, and sheer playing and making ability has a lot of coaches talking about what he's going to be able to do at the next level. With Thaddeus Moss moving on, LSU needs another big time weapon to it. So you have a kid from Marietta High School that finished at the top, along with Clemson's defensive tackle Brian Bresee. Bresee. Coming into the next group with four votes, you had a offensive tackle from Ohio State, linebackers from Oregon. And then in the next group that had three, we go to defensive back Keely Ringo out of Scottsdale, Arizona. He is with the Georgia Bulldogs, defensive back. One Pac-12 director of player personnel said, "He has upside like very few do. He could be a generational guy at that size and length. He's still raw, but he looks like an NFL guy." Another director of player personnel in the Pac-12 said he's that rare, big, long corner who's a top-notch explosive athlete. Very physical at the catch point, can really track in space and run to the ball. He's a profile tackler, has really natural man-match foot quickness and great long speed. In the next group of guys, you also have two votes. Defensive tackle Jalen Carter. That's also going to be at the University of Georgia, 6'4", 300 pounds, out of Apopka, Florida. Carter receiving only two votes was surprising to the two coaches who voted for him because of how athletic he is. At 6'4", 300, Carter won the MVP for his team at the Under Armour All-American game and even helped out a tight end when depth issues were a concern. And then finally, in a group of players that all had one vote, Georgia Tech had one guy. Jahmyr Gibbs, running back out of Dalton High School. On the ESPN ranked, he was 178. Georgia had another one, defensive back Jalen Kimber out of Arlington, Texas, ranked number 84 on the ESPN top 300. So Georgia and Georgia Tech with some guys on this list as far as players that you should watch for coming into this recruiting class that could have a big impact on the success of that particular team. And also we heard from Coach Jeff Collins of Georgia Tech. Of course, as there's no spring football and a lot of coaches don't really know what's going on. They don't know how to adapt from the standpoint of because they have no real timetable as to what is going to happen with their particular sport. At this point, we would think that everything's going to be a go for the regular season, but anything is possible. So Nick Saban released a video on Tuesday urging fans to practice social distancing. It's crazy, unlike anything we've ever experienced. And we need to remember that it goes a lot deeper than just football and sports that are impacted. Our world's been turned upside down. You just figure out the best way to manage what you can do. There's nothing else that you can. He says none of us know what's going to happen after April 15th. We'll stay connected to coaches and work on next year's opponents and stay in as close touch with our players as we can and keep recruiting as best we can. We'll do the best we can with what we've got, and I'm sure it's going to keep on changing. First-year coach Dave Aranda at Baylor, of course, taking over from Matt Rhule, said when talking about his coaching staff spread across the country, some at home with their families and players in the same situation, we've got a player within each position group who's going to be the leader. He's going to make sure that if he's in Dallas and one of his teammates is in Houston, they're communicating. Hey, we've got this run, or we've got this lower body workout, let's hit it. And, of course, remember, these guys, these coaches can't have, you know, all this contact and things like that. It's still crazy, again, but somebody's trying to argue with me on the text line about how the way the NCAA works, and he's got it kind of like 100% the opposite, 180 degrees opposite of the way it really does work, but it won't matter. There's some people that just love the NCAA and what they do and everything like that and think they can do no wrong. But he says, too, that there were some guys who were in Florida, some guys were in Mexico, some guys went to New York, so we're having to deal with all of that. Aranda said nobody in the program has reported any symptoms of the virus. It's kind of scary once you see it. Boston College has a new coach, Jeff Hafley, who's starting his first year there. When talking about how everybody had to leave out after five practices, they were upset that we had to leave, and they felt like they were starting something really special. He says they're getting daily schedules with players and meetings soon after they wake up. If I click a button, I will pop into a different room. I can join their room, crack a few jokes, and leave. There's no spying. He says, year one for both sides of the ball for me as a head coach. It's a challenge not being able to be around players. To build a relationship, you need to be around them. We'll do the best we can, but there's nothing like face-to-face teaching. It will put us at a big disadvantage as we can be. Duke and David Cutcliffe trying to do things. He said, you know, right now we can't meet as a staff. The next thing that could happen here is they lock us out of the facility completely. When talking about the position coach trying to meet with players, he says, then we'll send them to go to work out and we'll check back with them close to the, we'll check back with them to close out the day and get a nutritional tip and medical tip and say, okay, guys, you've got academics the rest of the day and go do a great job and we'll communicate to monitor or continue to monitor what's happening academically the rest of the day. I don't know any other way to try to do it. So, you know, all of these coaches right now in a precarious situation of not being able to try to know and figure out what the future is going to hold, when they're going to be able to get back together, how much contact are they going to have. You know, they obviously can't get too involved in the day-to-day activities of what these athletes are doing. They only have so much time. So crazy times right now in the world of college football. All right, will it be Ridley time for the Atlanta Falcons? I've got some numbers that say we may be getting the best of Calvin Ridley coming up this year. Talk about that next. It's the John Chuckman Show, hanging out with you as we roll along in the Brown Liquor Music Hour, Sports Radio 92 in the Game, and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back at it on the John Chuckery Show. Coming to you from parts unknown. 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Also, download your Radio.com app to be able to catch us on the go wherever you are. That way you never miss out on anything that we've got going on here. Follow us on social media. Keep up with everything going on there at 929 The Game for the station. I'm at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He is at Jarvis D90. As the Brown Liquor Music Hour rolls right along here on a Thursday night. Very excited. Tomorrow night, don't forget, we'll have Jim Ross and Sophia Choi. One may be more beautiful than the other, but still, both great in their own way for everything. So anyway, I got distracted there. We've talked about how the Falcons are loading up this team on offense and trying to get back to what they were in 2016, both in the running game, trying to protect their quarterback, and have plenty of weapons for that vertical passing game. One of the guys who I think is looking at potentially having his breakout year is Calvin Ridley. Now, of course, Ridley last year, 13 games played, and don't forget he got hurt during the Carolina game, which was his 13th game. When you look at his season numbers last year, having played three games less than he did the year before, still only had one less catch and 45 more yards year over year. But when you look at Calvin Ridley and what his numbers were before the Mohamed Sanu trade and after the Mohamed Sanu trade, because one of the things we talked about in the football season last year was it felt like Calvin Ridley really embraced the idea of now being that number two guy, now being that counterpart to Julio, and being the guy who can step up and really help in the passing game. So in the first seven games of last year, Calvin Ridley was getting 6.29 targets per game. He had 29 receptions for 373 yards. That's 12.86 yards per reception. That comes out to 53.29 yards per game in those first seven games. Take his last six games, which isn't even six full games because of the injury, 8.17 targets per game. So almost two targets per game more than what before Mohamed Sanu was traded. 34 receptions, 493 yards, so more catches, more yards in a shorter game span. And he averaged 14.5 yards per reception. That comes out to 82.2 yards per game. So just about, 29 yards. Can't do my math very well over there. 29 yards per game more than what he did the year before. And I'm sure had injuries not befallen Calvin Ridley, we certainly could have expected him to be in that 1,000-yard, maybe even 10-touchdown range. You got a wide receiver that's 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. I think you take that all day long, right? But all of the numbers are starting to trend upward for Calvin Ridley. And when you partner that with a few things, one is the idea is that your rookie offensive line from last year, along with the veterans that you still have, figure things out, people stay healthy, and can keep Matt upright more than anything, creating more time for him to be able to throw, more opportunity and things like that. Having another guy that's a speedster on the outside with Laquon Treadwell, a guy who's got great football speed, a guy who can really get things done, certainly fast, physical. I mean, he's got a lot of things that, you know, for whatever reason, haven't completely translated the NFL the way that they did when he was at Ole Miss. Certainly having the tight end and running back still in place because, let's face it, he had a really good receiving tight end last year in Austin Hooper, a guy who had, 70-some catches last year. Now, I'm not sure that Hayden Hurst is that same 70-plus catch guy. Maybe he is. But even if he's not, you would think that that would help to try to create some more possibilities for Ridley and some of these wide receivers out there. Obviously, being able to run the football effectively, especially on first down. If you've got that threat on first down that you can run the football for, let's say, 4 to 5 yards on an attempt, well, now all of a sudden you set your play-action passing game up, and now some of those long passes. Because, look, 14.5 yards in the NFL, that's a pretty stout number. You got a guy that's averaging about 15 yards a reception. That's pretty darn good. I get that in college you got guys that go for about 20 yards. I think Ruggs or one of those guys for Alabama was like 20 yards of reception. I mean, that's absurd. I mean, you're just not going to get those kinds of guys consistently in the NFL. But in the NFL, if you've got 15 or more yards per reception, that's a pretty stout number. That means either you can catch it underneath and run for a lot of yards, you got that yak, or you're one of those guys who can stretch the field that when you hit those big plays, you can pit up chunks of yards. I don't think it's unrealistic to think with the personnel around him, still having a great quarterback, hopefully an offensive line that keeps the quarterback upright, that 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns isn't an unrealistic possibility. And if he's 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns, he probably goes with Julio Jones to the Pro Bowl. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to go ahead and speak it into existence. Julio and Calvin will get picked to go to the Pro Bowl, but they're not going to play in the game. Not because they're hurt. Not because they don't want to go to Florida or whatever. Because we'll be too busy being in the Super Bowl for them to be going to any kind of Pro Bowl, right? I'm speaking at Jarvis into existence. You're hearing it. What's the date today? The 26th. March 26th at 10:28. Speaking in existence that we're not going to have any Pro Bowlers this year because they're all going to be at the Super Bowl. Fingers crossed. Jarvis says, have I been drinking brown liquor music over here? I don't know. I'm not admitting to anything. So anyway, Calvin Ridley. A lot to be hopeful for when you look at the numbers and you start to break it down, the difference between when him and Sanu were there. And that's not a knock against Mohamed Sanu or anything, but I think Ridley really, you saw, embraced that role, and I think you saw more confidence and trust in Matt. And certainly, look, they have the ability to be a very good vertical passing team. They've got three guys that can stretch the field, you know, and they have, you know, even Russell Gage to a certain degree, but I mean, you know, just even with the three receivers that they have, and certainly a running back that if you can get him underneath in space, creates a lot of mismatches. You know, we know Julio's going to get those two guys. You know, if Laquon Treadwell is one of those guys that you can send deep and pull another guy with him, now you leave a lot of opportunity for Ridley. Now you leave a lot of opportunity down the seam for Ridley and Hurst and some guys to really make some hay out of all of it. And that's where Dirk Koetter hopefully has a little bit of that Kyle Shanahan magic dust that he springs over all of this. To me, I still think it starts with the offensive line. I think you have to keep those guys healthy. You can't afford, you know, say what you will about the offensive line the Super Bowl year. Even with a guy like Chris Chester playing guard, and you got to the Super Bowl with Chris Chester playing guard, but a lot of that had to do with the fact that you had guys that were healthy on that offensive line. That you were able to keep that unit together of Mack and Levitre and Chester and Matthews and who's the kid? Ryan Schrader. You kept those guys together all season long. You don't want to have it to be substitute on your offensive line throughout the season. So it's imperative that, you know, the lost year that you had basically out of both of those guys, as McGarry's trying to learn on the job because he had no training camp. Lindstrom basically only got four games at the end of the year to really show anything that he could do. Those guys come back healthy. Those guys are ready, you know, having a full season under their belt. Jake is what he is. Jake's a very good left tackle. Alex Mack's still a pretty good center. You hope that you figure out left guard with Brown or Carpenter or Gonneau. One of those guys figures it out over there. But otherwise, keep Matt upright, and this has all the makings of one of the more dynamic offenses in the NFL. And really and truly, it's not even a matter of Ridley needs Julio to play well, because we know Julio is going to be that 1,400-yard receiver. It doesn't even matter. I don't think that if Treadwell plays well, I think Treadwell will benefit from having those two guys around him. Where you're talking about some jet sweeps, where you're talking about maybe some bubble screens that you can throw to him, that maybe we don't throw, you know, it seems like maybe we don't throw enough of those to Julio for whatever reason. Maybe Treadwell's that kind of guy that we can get those to be able to be another red zone threat on something like that. So very exciting times for the Atlanta Falcons offense. Hopefully things come together, but it's got to start with that offensive line. And if they can hold together and if you can run the football effectively on first down, it's just going to open up so many more things in your passing game. Now, if Todd Gurley is a legitimate threat on first down to be a 4 or 5 yard running back, man, I mean, the things you can do with that. And Dirk Koetter should be a good enough offense coordinator. We've had it, you know, he's had some success with us in the past. Last year felt sort of like a lost year in some ways. Like the offense never really just kind of got going to the point of what, you know, and I think a lot of that was the fact that they couldn't run the football when they needed to. And they played, you know, hokey pokey all year long on their offensive line. And as much as we want to talk about the NFL being a passing league and this, that, and the other, the fact is you still at times have to be able to run the football effectively. You have to be able to pick up short yardage in the run game to get your chains moving. You have to be able to have some success on first down in the run game to be able to draw teams in and hit those big play action passes. So, and we talked about earlier in the night, the NFL has said that it was a unanimous vote. The draft will stay April 23rd through the 25th. The draft is not going to be changing dates or anything like that. It's, you know, full steam ahead. And there's no reason to change the date. Again, you can have the draft in any sort of form or fashion that you want. It could be Roger Goodell inside a bubble facility and people hand him a card through a bubble window. and he's wrapped in plastic and nothing can happen to him, you know, and there's like disinfectant spray all in the air around him. It doesn't matter. People will still watch. You could have the Oompa Loompas wear those white uniforms that they did when they were doing the TV filming in Willy Wonka. Okay? Like the Oompa Loompas could walk up to Roger Goodell, who's in a plastic bubble like John Travolta, okay, hand him a card with a team and a player on it and just read it through the bubble with the plastic. You can't even hear him very well. He's incoherent. But you can hear enough from him to say, Isaiah Simmons. And that would be all you need to have success in the NFL draft. At the end of the day, I just care about who the Falcons have on their roster. I don't care. Listen, and put me in the minority on this. I don't care about the feel-good stories. I don't need to see the moments. Okay? I just want to know who we drafted. Because when I come on the air the following days or whatever like that, the first round is on Thursday? Okay, when I come in on Friday night or Thursday night or whatever, I just want to say, here's who the Falcons drafted. I don't need the feel-good story about it or, you know, where he comes from. You know, he's born on the bayou. You know, those are neat. Those are fine for what they are. But, you know, just you know, give me the baby. I don't need the labor pains. All right, when we get back, baseball's got lots of things on their table, lots of proposals. But do we really need a full season schedule worth? We'll talk about that next. Chuck, we're here hanging out with you on a Thursday night, Sports Radio 92 in the game. Sports Radio 92.9 the game. Headed toward the home front here on sports on the John Chuckman Show. Sorry. A little tired. And been a long day, but happy to be back with everybody. Hanging out with you until 11 o'clock tonight, 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Don't forget to download the Radio.com app. Catch us on the go. Put it on your device. That way you never miss anything going on with the show, with the station. Anything over the previous 24 hours. So even if you don't catch all of the John Chuckery Show, you can go back and listen to it in real time. See what kind of craziness I said, then listen to what Freaky and Hugh followed up with all of it about. Social media at JMCH316. He's at JarvisD90. Before we get into the MLB stuff, have to send birthday wishes. I did not realize it was his birthday today, but we have to send birthday wishes to James Caan, who was part of the cast, I think the greatest cast in movie history, to what I think is the best movie ever made. Now, it may not be your favorite movie. It may not be some people's best movie of all time, but it's the best movie ever made. It's The Godfather, the original Godfather. You could never make The Godfather today. You could never have the kind of verbiage and tone and things like that, that kind of movie today, and how long that movie was, too. It's still the most amazing piece of cinematic art that's ever been put together. I know some people think that the second one is better. To those people, you're wrong. It's not better than the original one, and it's because of guys like James Caan, because of Marlon Brando. I mean, how important those guys were. Love De Niro's performance as a young Vito Corleone, but I mean, just the whole story of the first one and just kind of laying that all out. And by the way, the book is totally different than the way the movie is. But James Caan, obviously a huge part of that. He tried out for the part what was Pacino's character? Michael Corleone. But they wanted kind of more of an unknown, and they wanted James Caan to play another role in it. So he didn't get the role of Michael, so he got the role of the older brother, Sonny. Of course, he's gunned down, and I'm not spoiling it because the movie's, 50 years old now at this point, but he gets gunned down at the causeway. Just a tremendous piece of cinema. And then some other good movies. I just kind of enjoy him and his characters. Rollerball was obviously very ahead of its time. Just even some of the other movies that he was in. The one with Schwarzenegger, Eraser. He played that way over-the-top character. Which is fine. I like some of that kind of stuff. I mean, just stay true to yourself. What was a movie that he did with Hold on. Oh, Elf, obviously. Elf was a tremendous movie as well. Honeymoon in Vegas, not the best movie, but not the worst movie that's out there. Misery, obviously. And, of course, really became famous with Brian's Song, too. That's a very, very good movie as well. You know, it's funny, just kind of always looked at as one of those tough guys, one of those guys, spent a lot of time at the Playboy Mansion playing cards with Hef. Yeah, so he was one of those regular guys that was there on it. So God bless him. James Caan, 80 years old today. Hard to believe, but James Caan, 80 years old. Happy birthday to one of the legends, one of the real kind of like guys, true tough guys in movie history. So lots of proposals being put out there by Major League Baseball, and lots of things that have to be worked out as of yet. Let's let you hear from Rob Manfred, who joined Scott Van Pelt last night on ESPN, as he talked about what he thinks the future holds for baseball and how this season may look moving forward.
We need to have a regular season with a credible number of games. I think we should have a postseason format that focuses on providing the most possible entertaining product to our fans at a very, very difficult time in our history. And overall, I think our goal is to play as many baseball games as we possibly can, given the limitations associated with the public health concerns.
Now, that is the big thing, is how many games. And by all accounts, the Players Union and Major League Baseball want to play as many games as possible, even if that means moving into November for playoff baseball. And let's face it, they're not doing that because fans are clamoring for it or things like that. They want the money. They want the TV money. Players want, they don't want to have prorated salaries and things like that for games missed and such like that. They want, I think the two main things that they want is, no matter how long the season is, they get a year of service time. Because if for some reason it's canceled, Mookie Betts doesn't want to have to play a whole nother year and then become a free agent. Okay? And the less prorated salary that they can have for the players, you know, if that means they have to play some doubleheaders during the week. And that's what they're talking about, by the way. They're talking about potentially trying to get as close to 162 as they can, which probably means that you're going to have some doubleheaders during the week, multiple doubleheaders during the week. Because now the talk is, when you read Jeff Passan and some of these other guys, it's going to be June before you get regular season baseball. Because they want a spring training. There needs to be a spring training. Guys have gone ice cold, not getting a chance to do a lot of working out and throwing and things like that. So to get guys up to speed, you're going to need 3 to 4 weeks of spring training, and that's what's being proposed. Well, they're not even going to start spring training until sometime in May, which is going to put you every bit into June before the regular season starts. So today being opening day, you've obviously missed a week or so in March, all of April, all of May, and now you're talking about into June. And I don't understand why 120 games, 120 games, shouldn't be a maximum limit. That's still not a sprint. That's still a marathon. But it's because, obviously, players and owners want as much money as they possibly can, which I'm the first guy to tell you. I'm a capitalist all the way. I'm all about making that money. But don't misunderstand it. There's no fan clamoring about playing multiple games during the week. There's only so much baseball I think you can consume after a while just to try to squeeze the schedule in. And no matter how you expand the rosters, because the more you expand the rosters, remember, the more watered-down players that you have. You're going to have, you know, every vagabond reliever that you can toss out there because you won't have enough arms. Or you have plenty of minor leaguers who aren't ready to pitch at this level, and that's who you're going to have to trot out there. And who knows what the long-term effects are. I like the idea of more of like 100, 120 games. I think most guys, even at catcher and things like that, can play most of that schedule. Even for some of the older guys, there's not a reason why that 120 games wouldn't be a pretty good season. But the almighty dollar, and that drives everything that we do. So we will see. We still don't have all the details worked out because there are still things like, you know, the year of service, what pay is going to be, what the CDC among and the president, things like that, are going to say as far as when they want people starting back up. And I do realistically think that even when baseball starts back up, you will not have fans in stands. I think that will be a slow migration before you get fans. It won't be, hey, here's the start of our season, 50,000 people in the stadium. I just don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think even by June you're going to have that level of, secure feeling about how you can have that many people in stands and have that many group of people together. So I think we'll get baseball back. I think we're still a little ways away, but I think the fan experience is not going to be there. And maybe even too much. You know, they say that too much of a good thing, right? That could be what baseball tries to do. If it's trying to do 150 games in a very condensed schedule. And look, I don't need the World Series on Thanksgiving. I got college football rivalries. I got NFL games going on. I got MLS getting ready for playoffs. I don't need Major League Baseball trying to throw the World Series in because just they want to make sure they get it in and done. I just don't. I don't have to have it that bad. You know, I'd rather sacrifice some of the regular season and play it a little bit. You know, again, if it's a week or two, that's one thing. But if we're talking about getting into Thanksgiving and I got Survivor Series and everything else going on, man, I got time for all that. I got time to watch the Blue Jays and the Padres when I got WWE Survivor Series. Come on, man. Gonna have priorities out there. So, all right. When we come back, it will be time for the Love TKO. We'll get things wrapped up here on the show, and we'll get you turned over to network coverage. So, all that coming up next. It is Chuckery hanging out with you, not in the Key Studios, but out in parts unknown on the John Chuckery Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and on the radio.com app.
And with every passing minute, oh baby, so much joy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.